just want to comment that before we start, people ask questions in the shir, and often afterwards, I give my answer, and then throughout the week, it settles, percolates, and I start thinking, there's more to it, I should have said this, and I should have said that, and then I start considering maybe I should come back next week and fill in, but then we will never make progress. So we'll do the best we can in this year, but and then we'll just move on. But then, if you do ever feel that you didn't get a full answer in this year, contact me again afterwards. There might be more to say on the subject. Okay. What we're going to be doing this week is interesting. Last week we basically saw this story. Now we're diving straight into the heavy stuff. We'll continue reading a little bit and see where this is going. Last week we saw that we have this very sincere king of Khuzar who's a very spiritual guy trying to please whoever it is that's up there. And he was very devout about the Khuzari religion. And he kept on getting this dream that, yes, your heart is in the right place, but your actions are all off. And he was inspired to try to figure out what is the truth. So now, Amru, the continuation of the story is, Kikasheroam melech Khuzar b'chaloymoy. That when the Khuzari king saw in his dream that his intent was indeed pleasing, but he was told that your actions are off, you're going about it wrong, and he was commanded in this dream to try to discover what are the deeds, what are the actions that Hashem does want. It's not enough that your heart is in the right place. You have to get your actions lined up in the right place also. So he's going to start investigating at the addresses that might be sources for the truth. And as we saw last week, the first people on his list are the philosopher, which if we translate into modern terms is the atheist. Wasn't exactly an atheist, we'll see. The Muslim and Christian representatives. The Shal philosoph Echad Shahaya Bidura Al Emunasa. His first step was to ask a philosopher of his times about his faith. Now, I was wondering, should we go through this? We're talking about philosophy that's completely outdated, both from the theological and from the scientific standpoint. So we have to drag a skeleton out of the closet. And not just a skeleton, but a skeleton that's long rotten. What for? So I thought maybe we should skip it. But then, basically for three reasons, I decided that would really not be a good idea. First of all, because people are coming to a Khuzari shiur are obviously interested in the intellectual sparring. So we're going to go through it. But there are more important reasons. As we study what the philosopher has to say, we're going to notice very interestingly that in part he was quite on target. Just in some areas he kind of just missed. And it's worth our while to study that a little more. That's reason number two. The third reason why it's worthwhile to see what he has to say is because realizing the very fact that this, what we're going to hear now, that sounds completely primitive and outdated, was at the time considered the cutting edge of scientific belief and of the intelligentsia. And I have a very big purpose in bringing that out. But we'll get to each thing one at a time. So what I want to do first is just read through it slowly, see his full presentation, and then go back to analyze it piece by piece. Omar Leah philosoph. So the philosopher said, sure, there is an original source of everything. At that time, they weren't as dumb as to think that things could happen on their own, not guided by anything. There must be some supreme intellect. Yet, they managed to be atheistic in a different way. And therefore, he says as follows. There is a creator, but there's no such thing as pleasing or displeasing him. Because he is above any wants or any purposes. If you say, religion says that the Creator has a purpose in the creation, we believe that he's above that. The religions say that he wants you to do this, he wants you to do that, this is pleasing to him, this is displeasing to him. We believe that he's above that. Why? He's making a good point. We're going to have to contend with this. If you say that someone has a purpose in doing something, or wants something, that means that without that purpose being fulfilled, or without that desire being met, his existence is not perfect. If I need money, and I don't have that money, or say I just want something, and I don't have it, my existence is not perfect. I'm not in a perfect state. Can you say that Hashem is in a state of existence that isn't perfect? That Hashem is missing something in order to be in a proper state of existence? How can you say that? He's asking a good question. We can't just write it off. By saying that the Creator has a purpose in the creation, that means that without it, let's say, without the world, before the world was created, he was missing something. As long as his purpose is not fulfilled, he's missing something. He created us, he wants us to do mitzvahs. Without those mitzvahs, he's missing something. Now, even if we say that he doesn't need our mitzvahs, but he wants us to do them, that means that theoretically, there's a possibility of his will, him not getting something he wants. Could there be such a thing of a perfect almighty Hashem who could not get something that he wants? Or could be in a state that he doesn't have everything he wants, he still needs us to do something for him? And therefore, the very notion of saying that Hashem is pleased by this is already compromising Hashem's greatness, says the philosopher. Now, what's going to be interesting is we should get into the Kuzri mindset right at the start. It's going to be very interesting that the king of Kuzar is not, the Sefer is not going to directly answer his problems. Kind of just going to brush it aside and move on. We'll see. So we have to get already into the Kuzari mindset from the beginning. Basically, the Kuzari's philosophy is, give a mashal. There was once a blind man who was in a building. He was trying to get out. He walked to this door, found himself in a closet. Tried this, tried that. He couldn't get out. Finally, a seeing man walked in. He sees him fumbling. He asks him, what do you want? He says, I want you to show me the door. He leads him over to the door and shows him out. The blind person says, wait a minute, I don't understand. I tried a much bigger door and found myself in a closet. How could this small door be the exit? So the seeing man tells him, look, logically you have a good point, but what should I tell you? This is the exit. You're out. Right? Logic, but the metzius is the metzius. Or, let's say I suddenly wake up one day and I say, you know what? The story of my parents' shidduch, statistically, is very unlikely. It's completely uncanny, the story of how they met each other. Statistically, it shouldn't have happened. So can I establish that it did? Maybe it didn't happen. Maybe my parents didn't marry. Now that puts me in a problematic state. I can't collect my check this month. My parents didn't marry. It means I'm not here. So one minute. You're here. Your parents are married. That's a fact. Now, there are difficulties with that. It defies statistics. It doesn't work out logically. I don't know, but they're married. What are you going to do? So we'll see soon that the Kuzari's approach is, why should we start discussing of if Hashem could work this way, if Hashem can't work this way? Once we know that the Torah was given min HaShamayim, then we met Hashem and He told us, I want. Now, if we're going to have philosophical problems with that, we have a problem. But we met Hashem and He told us, I want. What, are you going to argue with the reality that you saw with your eyes? So really, once we can establish that the Torah was given at Sinai, we'll get to that. Once we can establish that, all additional discussion is really superfluous.
Is the Kuzari's parsha on the philosopher, is that based off of Matan Torah or based off of his own dream in which Hashem says to him?
Well, so we'll see soon. I'm saying the Kuzari as in the Chover. But we'll see soon. We're not going to get to that yet. Meaning the Jewish Chacham who's ultimately going to present his philosophy. But that is the train of thought that this Sefer is going with. What? No, so the king really should have
to get information and think about it and move on as opposed to debate.
No, he is going to debate. We're going to see him debating soon. But he's not really going to answer all the problems that this philosopher is raising. And I'm just explaining why the author of this Sefer didn't see it necessary to do so. But still, we're going to go through, we're going to see the problems that he raises. After understanding why they don't really matter, because once you met Hashem, you can't ask Him, are you really there? It doesn't add up to me, right? You met Him, you saw Him. That's it, discussion is closed. Right? And if He told you, I want, that means He wants. You can't come now and wonder that He did. Having known that, we'll see the problems that the philosopher is raising and we'll see how we need to answer that. But that's point number one. He's saying that the very notion that Hashem has a purpose implies that His existence is not automatically perfect. He wants something, that means that He's not automatically in a perfect existence. Now, he takes it a step further. Says also, we're going to see soon, his concept of God is abstract intellectuality. This is what the philosophers of earlier time believed. There is a greater power. There is a supreme intelligence. But all it is abstract intellectuality. Anything that changes, anything circumstantial, is simply, he doesn't relate to. Because he just knows wisdom. Wisdom is abstract. He knows philosophy. Right? Philosophy doesn't encompass. I didn't graduate high school. You have to bear with my English. But things changing, new things developing. He's got his wisdom that always stays as it is. Wisdom that doesn't change. Intellect that doesn't change. It's on an abstract level. Any change, any facts that could or could not be, are below the realm of his intellect. Well, we'll see. We'll see. So therefore, yes, his intellect is above the level of relating to individuals. Mankind as a species, he might relate to. Because that's an established fact that doesn't change. It's not subject to coming and going. But things that come and go, things that are temporal, it's just below that supreme intellect. If Neshem Ishtanim, these are things that change. And that supreme intellect just doesn't change. So believe me, my friend, he says to the king of Kuzar, stop with all this sentimental stuff. He doesn't know about you. You're under his radar. Kol sheken sheyeda kavanos kol maasecha. He certainly is not aware of your intent. Kol sheken sheyishma tfilascha v'yira tnoisecha. And he certainly does not relate to your prayers or take note of anything you do. It's below his radar. It's not. It's way below where that level of intellect is. So that's point number two that he's really making. A, he can't have any purpose or wants, because that conflicts with perfection. B, supreme intellect means intellect that doesn't change. Knowledge that changes, the fact that you know that someone was born, someone died, means it's knowledge that's affected by things outside of you. Right? Things that come and go. It doesn't relate to this. Again, I'm just sticking in. Yeah. Making things run in a general way.
Run in a general way, but Mother Nature, you know, doesn't notice if she has Long Island with a hurricane or it happens to, like, this person. You know, it's not routine.
That's very true. That's very true. But the truth is that he's saying something even a little more than that. He's saying that it's because we relate to him as a supreme intellect that he can't relate to these things. Because it conflicts with the level of intellectuality that we ascribe to. Intellectuality is just something that all truths that don't change. The very fact that a person is born and dies means that he's not absolute truth. Truth doesn't change. Okay, I'm just sticking it in parentheses again. The whole Sefer is not this style. You're going to meet things that are much more relevant to us. This is the philosopher. We're going to see. Spend a little bit of time on him and we're going to move on. But again, let's move on before we get back to address his point. Point number three that the philosopher is making. He's laying down his 13 ikarim, okay? Now, how does creation work? If this creator is above temporal existence, how are we created? So the answer is yes, we were created by him, but in a different way than religion thinks. How's that? If the philosophers say that he created you, they mean it in a mushal kind of way, in a figurative way, meaning you definitely resulted from him. You couldn't come into existence. He's the cause of your existence. But it wasn't a conscious decision on his part. It's something that just kind of developed. This is a different form of evolution. Almost an opposite form of evolution. Let's see. He is the ultimate source of any creature. Not because he decided to create, but because, as you'll see soon, they believed that anything in his existence kind of radiated from him. He is just this abstract intellect, and somehow from him radiated more physical forms that developed into more physical forms, kind of opposite of evolution, until it turned into the physical world that we know. We're kind of at the bottom of an evolution process, which started with abstract intellectual beings, which are completely above any of these things, and from then developed these more physical forms of existence. This is very interesting because it trickled down to us, exactly. But there was nothing conscious on his part. It happened. He's not even aware of the bottom of the ladder because it's not within his realm of intellect. Now it's very, very interesting that what he's saying here, this idea, is very reminiscent of anybody who's dabbled even a little bit in things that come, just hint to Kabbalah a little bit, is familiar with this concept. With the concept of all physical existence, Nishtalshulis, exactly. All physical existence being a physical manifestation of a more spiritual level, of a more spiritual level, of a more spiritual level. It's very interesting. Apparently, human intellect pushed to its maximum, which is what the, many of the philosophers were, somehow sensed that it must work this way. There's spirituality behind the physical. Mamish, the opposite of evolution that we know. Right? Where it's the other way around. It started from nothing, which did a little more, a little more, a little more. That's right. That's right. And now he says, he's next, we already seen three of his fundamentals of faith. Now we're going to see another fundamental of faith. There was no first man. Ki ha'olam kadmoi. The world has no beginning. V'loisara adam noilad me'adam shekadamoi. Any man was born from a previous man, which was born from a previous man, infinitely back. Because, again, we're saying that all of existence is an automatic development from that supreme intellect. Just as that supreme intellect had no beginning, the automatic development also has no beginning. So the world has no beginning. You think about that today, from a scientific standpoint, from a logical standpoint, completely ridiculous. Yet, some of the greatest minds believe this. Believe this nonsense. How could something finite not have had a beginning? So I just want to note, here in parentheses, again, we're going to get back to just these things more in depth. But this is, again, let's note, this is fundamental number four. Just as that supreme intellect always was, all of his offshoots always were. The world never began.
If there was no first man, man goes back, infinite man, into the past, then how is man connected to the first cause? And maybe it seems that man would have independent existence.
Well, it's an automatic, put it this way, that first cause automatically manifests as this whole chain of offshoots, if we'll call it that. You automatically radiate these things from its very being. So, from when he existed, they had to exist, and he always existed, so they also always existed. Now, the truth is, if you think about this, you can't comprehend such a thing. And the truth is that neither did they. If it's not something that he decided to do, but it's an automatic effect of his existence, then yes. If his existence automatically results in this, then yes. Again, let's remember, they don't believe that he decided to create something, because the very decision implies that he was missing something. He never made any decision. This was something that automatically developed from him.
It sounds like a thought process.
Right. Right. So what they end up with is half denying God. They're saying a God that relates to people, a God that creates, no. But there's some supreme intellect that automatically causes existence. Here also, I just want to make a point. And this is an important point because this is very relevant also in relating to atheism in our times. Sometimes you can set an axiom that we say, this is must be how it works. We don't understand it, but this must be how it is. And therefore, we just get used to the idea. In those days, people really believed that they did understand it. The same way atheists today believe that they do understand that the perfect creation could have resulted by itself. But really, the idea was they came up with this principle and it grew on them. Until at those times, since that was conventional science, it grew on them and they related to it. It's very fundamental in understanding how a lot of these things work. A mashal that my Rebbe gave about many of these scientific axioms. Okay? He said, one time, a kid asked his father, I don't understand how the cordless phone works. How could it be that the cordless phone can connect to, can get power from some base? So his father said to him, and the phone with the cord, you do understand? So the kid said, no, you're right, I don't understand that either. So his father said, you know what? I'll explain to you how the phone with the cord works, and then we'll be able to take that a step further. Building on that, we'll understand how the cordless works. So here's the physics, here's the principle behind the phone with the cord. You take a dog, you pull its tail over here. It barks over there, right? Okay? That's the principle, that's the scientific mechanism behind the cord full phone. Okay? Now again, we see that there's such a concept. How does that work with a phone? 1 minute. There's a concept. You see that this is a law of nature. There is such a thing. It's pulling over here, and you hear it over there. There's such a law of nature. We understand that that's how the phone works too. Okay, now, think about that. Got it clear? This is an axiom. This is a law of nature. That there is such a thing. It's pulling the dog's tail here, it barks over there. So you can have a phone here, and the phone rings over there. Now the cordless phone is the same thing, just without the dog in the middle. Okay? Now again, once you got used to the idea that there could be such a thing, so, okay, we'll take it a step further. So that's again the idea. You introduce axioms because they work mathematically, right? It grows on you, and now you can build on it even more. You don't even know, you don't really understand the axiom and the principle in the first place. Right? But we create an axiom, and now let's build on it. Right? So that's basically really what happened here. We introduced this idea. This is how it is. There was no beginning, right? You understand that the supreme intellect couldn't have a beginning, right? And he couldn't create, right? So it must be an automatic offshoot, right? Got that? Clear? That means that the finite world has no beginning. You don't understand it. But forget about that. Get used to the idea because that must be how it works. If you think along these lines, it tells us a lot about my current atheism also. Life without an ice maker.
Right? And so he showed her that you know how to ice maker. You put the water in, put it in the freezer, and then while later,
ice. Mind boggling innovation.
Right. Oh.
Yeah? Okay. Fine. So, but the reason I'm stressing this is because I want to show how something that we understand today is so ridiculous. At that time was conventional science. So let's realize, don't be intimidated by the fact that that's what all the intelligentsia say. That's conventional science. What, are you going to go deny it all? If you would be able to step out of this box, right, of our current reality, it's quite likely in 1,000 years from now they'll say, what, they really believe that? Right? Okay, just think about it for a minute, right? Kodesh HaLovitz says, for example, I want to bring this point home. Kodesh HaLovitz says, one of the great wonders, if you want to mamish see the Yad Hashem at work, is development. It's development. The human body develops at the right time. That's simply miraculous. So you'll have, today, we'll smile intelligently. We'll say, ah, poor old primitive Kodesh HaLovitz. Today we know that it's not that amazing because there's DNA. It's all there in the first place. It's not true that it's miraculously developing. Oh, what do you mean? You mean that there's a... When the cell is first formed, it's a 2/1000th of an inch, a large cell. They're measured in micrometers. 2/1000th of an inch. It comes with a notebook, which contains millions of details of instructions about how it's supposed to play out. And that notebook carries out its instructions automatically. So what's the wonder? Right? No, it's not automatic. It's not what we're saying. There are amino acids. There are proteins that carry the messages back and forth between the different cells, and that's how it develops. Okay, that makes sense. Now I understand. It's not that amazing. Again, it's the same idea. It grows on you. It grows on you. So, oh, it's not that amazing. We can explain it.
I was just reading a book recently, and I read a book that scientists were looking at... scientist, right? And he said that experts are usually defined as a group of people who decide to make the same assumptions, and they decide that you don't need to have proof. No.
Very good. There's no question that there's a scientific clique, and that's the way it works. Now, the only reason this works, by the way, we'll get to this also, the only reason this works is because what they have on their side is the fact that we're already accustomed to the wondrous things we see. You have a person be born 30 years old, right, with full intellect, and see his body, you could never begin talking this way to him. It's only because of the fact that by the time we start thinking about it, it's already old news. It's like the ice maker. It's old news. Of course I have arms. Of course I have... It's always been this way. Why should it be otherwise? Now I could start explaining that, yeah, of course, there's a notebook and there are amino acids carrying out the instructions. It all makes sense. Okay. Now, we've seen four fundamentals of faith with this philosopher. He moves on. So how does man develop? How does the individual develop? Again, there's no plan and purpose. There's no planned creation on the part of this supreme intellect. We are all just the results of a whole existence that kind of developed from him. So, by today, there are a whole bunch of factors that contribute to the creation of the individual. Man is basically the result of a haphazard mix of all kinds of forms, character traits, and natures. By today, we're not the first creation, right? By today, we are being born of other parents, and therefore, we are the result of my father's looks, character traits, my mother's looks and character traits, which kind of blended together. There are all kinds of other factors. Atmosphere, the place in the world that you live, the food that your ancestors ate, Vamemas, the waters they drank. All these things are contributing factors. Im koichos ha-galgalim v'amazolis v'chayolim, combined with the astrological factors, how each person is born under the influence of a different astrological force. They believe in that. Ba'arochem ha-hoivim mehem. So yes, every person is individual, because look at the immense blend of factors. There's no planned creation here. But look at the major blend of factors. You throw all these different factors into a blender and blend it all together, each person comes out completely different. Now, of course, every person ultimately results from this first existence, from that supreme intellect. But not because of it planned it in any way. This is amazing. He's using the same terms as Kabbalah in describing this process of one form of existence radiating into another form, into another form, into lower forms. It's atzilus. It's a form of radiation. Atzilus is mamish. Everybody's heard the term. There's nothing planned here. It's simply an automatic process that ultimately resulted in you. You are the result of this whole process, after there are already a bunch of other factors contributing. Right, there was the first offshoot, which gave way to the second offshoot, which gave way to the third. One offshoot connected to the previous ones and ultimately made their way down. And that's the world as you see it today. And now he reiterates this shtus. This process, this whole chain, always was kashasi barishano kadmoinis, just like the original source, the supreme intellect always was. Ein latchila, it has no beginning. Okay. And now he continues. He's really just elaborating on what he said. Now I'm aiming to finish his presentation tonight, so we don't have to waste too much more time with it, and we'll elaborate on the different points next week, Bezos Hashem. ולכל איש מאיש אל עולם סיבויס שמוהם יגומר כפי הקובס והאיכיוס. Each person is the result of a whole bunch of factors that equal him. ויש איש שנשלמו סיבויסו ובו שולם. One person is the result of a more favorable combination of factors. So he comes out more perfect. You have a person who had a lousy combination of factors, and he came out deficient. Kakushi. Like the kushi. Ashalehuchan leyoise mikibul tsuasa adam vadibu. Who just has the most basic and primitive form of man. But he's as deficient as it comes. While the other end of the spectrum is the philosopher. Well, you have the philosopher. Right? Me. He is created with natures. He is the result of a favorable combination of factors, and therefore his nature is conducive to developing perfect character, perfect intellect, and perfectly developing an understanding of skills. He can grow to become the epitome of what man could be. Meaning the philosopher is actually the result of the most perfect, the most optimal combination of contributing factors. Aval ashlemus hazeh bekoyach. Yet, you have to realize that since after all you're human, all that perfection, meaning you are basically the philosopher, Aristotle, is the result of a most perfect combination of factors, which gives him innate perfection. But he has to develop it. Listen, here also, he's going to be saying some things that we very much identify with. These things have to be brought out through self-discipline, through study, through insight. Meaning, at the end of the day, even with all of your inherent capabilities and everything you could be, if you're just going to use your body in a coarse way, and in a base way, you're not going to develop that inner refinement. You have to bring it out. What's that? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, they would believe. No, they would believe that you should rise above all that. He's not concerned about continuing the race. You want to reach the perfection that humanity could be. These things are not part of human perfection. No. He believes that the drive to have children is part of the animalistic aspect. And his ambition is to rise above that. Right? It's like the Christians and all the others. Now, and here we're coming to his next, up to now he was just elaborating. Now we're coming to his next fundamental of faith.
Is he saying that intellectual is the main thing?
Yes. He's saying all it is intellectuality,
so and the guy's informed and disabled, whatever, but he's intellectually great. He's a philosopher.
Yes.
He's on a high level.
Yes. Yes.
And
on the contrary.
Exactly.
Yeah, like we see in the Olympics. Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's saying, rise above all of your bodily constraints. And now we're coming on to the next fundamental of his faith. This is their version of Olam Haba. And this is also interesting, that they always had this sense that it doesn't need to end with death. Even the atheists of earlier times. But listen to the way he puts it. It's very interesting. V'asholim yidbak boy min ha'elohi or. Elohi or. There is this supreme intellect. Now that's simply abstract intellectuality. You could tap into it. You could actually connect to it by developing your intellect to the fullest. By developing your intellect to the fullest, you can actually merge with that supreme intellectuality. That's supreme intellect. Shonikra Sechel HaPoya. He refers to this as the active intellect, with a capital A. We'll see soon what he's contrasting it. Meaning there's material intellect. We very much believe in this concept also. A person can use his intellect just as a means of facilitating a physical existence. Right? I use my intellect to figure out ways of making money, to figure out ways of having a good time, right? Of furthering my physical existence. Soon he's going to call that material intellect. I'm going to call it that soon. He's saying we want, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about intellect for the sake of intellect. Pure intellect. That by him is what he idolizes. That's his God. Pure intellect. And that's what we want to connect to. Yidbak boy sichloi hanif al dvekus is achtus. You can ultimately develop your intellect to an extent that it merges with that supreme intellect. Oh, we're going to see quite a few things that are Jewish. He's noting something amazing here. He sensed something that for us is one of the fundamental things that we believe. He sensed that human intellect is something sublime. Human intellect is really something supreme. The truth is, if we're going to put it into our terms, the seichel that we have is the tzelem elokim of a person. It's really what it is. In fact, the Sfarim says that exactly what he's saying here, just in Jewish terms. The Sfarim says, for us, this is relevant. Your seichel is what continues to live after you die. My people here, it's olam haba. Who's going to get olam haba? My neshama, not me. I, who are you? Right, that's a famous philosophical question. Who are you? Are you your mouth? Are you your stomach? Who are you? When you talk about me. I remember as a kid thinking, what good is it going to do me? My neshama goes to Olam Haba, Shkoyach. I want to go to Olam Haba. I'm going to go to the grave and the neshama is going to go to Olam Haba? Wait a minute, who's you? Shfarna says, you is your seichel. Right? Who is it that desires? Is it your mouth? Your stomach? No. It's your seichel. You want to develop your seichel, perfect your seichel as much as you possibly can, because that's what's going to continue afterwards. And he proves it. The Sfarna says, look, when people are using their seichel, again, when a person only uses his seichel in a material way, like we described before, the intellect diminishes along with the body. A person reaches a certain age, the body starts deteriorating and the intellect with it, because the intellect is just one aspect of your physical body. But when a person is developing his intellect as an end in itself throughout his life, as far as it says, note that as much as the body deteriorates, the intellect gets sharper and sharper. Of course, sometimes there are specific conditions, Alzheimer's, chas v'shalom, it can come upon people who are busy developing their intellect their whole life. But barring such things, you see that the people who are working on developing their intellect their whole life, they remain sharp. You see that the intellect is something separate. And they sensed this too. And therefore they believed, and they were right, just they got it a little off. That's right, you don't want your mind to start rotting. Yeah? The day you retire, I heard somebody say, is the day you start to die. But again, depends what you're going to do if you're going to retire. If you can retire to continue developing the intellect, go for it. That's what many people today do, many of the conscientious. So now, so he says, yes, it's going to connect with this supreme intellect. Until you reach a situation where you and that supreme intellect, there's nothing separating you. You've managed to connect your intellect to that supreme intellect. Now, there's a few things this is reminiscent of. First of all, it's kind of reminiscent of Buddha. Buddha believes also that there isn't the conscious God. There's this inner energy that everybody can connect to. That also, they sapped off Judaism, just they detached God from it. What do we believe? We believe that every Jew, right? We also believe in that radiating idea. roots back to a place where all Jewish neshamas come together. And ultimately, it all connects to Hashem. And through our efforts in this world, perfecting our character, perfecting our minds, forming mitzvahs, making the right choices, we are connecting more and more to Hashem. We're screwing ourselves into Hashem. The more you can screw yourself in, the more connected you'll be ultimately. A person's body leaves him, he just sees that connection with Hashem. And look how then, coming without the guidance of the Torah, just using human intellect, we're able to sense these things in a very vague way. They didn't manage to get the picture right, but they're able to sense these things. But it's very interesting how, like you said, a lot of the things that he's expressing parallel Yiddishkeit in different ways. But this is what he's telling us. He has his version of Olam Haba. You connect to the supreme intellect. And once you manage to fully develop that intellect, here also, let's see where he's going with this. Once you manage to fully develop that intellect, that prevails over your body, and all of your tools, meaning all of your limbs, all of your body, just become vehicles of the intellect. All of your body will simply manifest that perfection of mind that you've managed to acquire. They'll only make the perfect, most perfect of choices. They'll only do the most perfect of things. At the perfect times, in the perfect way. As though your entire body are just vehicles of that active intellect. It's the supreme intellect that's completely above the body, and the body is simply playing to its tune. Very theoretical. This is where they believed it took them. Somehow the greatest of philosophers didn't make it there. Right? So, okay, theoretically, this is the way it should work. I don't know. The truth is, I don't know. There's that famous story about, I don't know if it was Aristotle. Who's the one that they say it about? That when the Talmidim asked him that his teachings don't exactly jive with what he does. So he said, well, a teacher of geometry doesn't have to be a triangle. Who was it?
Socrates.
Socrates. Wasn't Socrates? What's that?
It was in the last century.
Really?
Are you talking about Bertrand Russell?
I was the one who said it? So I take back what I said.
I teach morality. It doesn't mean I'm a professor of ethics. Doesn't mean I have to live in ethics.
Okay. I heard it said about the earlier philosophers. Could be that I'm wrong, and maybe there was such a thing as people really living according to what their intellect. I have to realize the Rambam says that something that Aristotle, for example, came just under the level of Nevuah. We're talking about people with massive intellects. And Humanish tapped into their intellects. It is conceivable, and so I'm glad to hear that, because that makes this work better. That they did reach a situation where their intellect prevailed over all their instincts. This is what I referred to earlier. They're not just living at the superficial level of material intellect, where intellect just serves the body. The other way around. Now the intellect rules. The body is completely in conformance with what the intellect dictates. You ever notice how ridiculous it is? Take the example of the story of Shom Shvadron. Okay. He once offended a large audience. We'll end with this. We'll have to continue this next week. He once offended a large audience by saying some very favorite sports star had died. And he was in Holland. And he was in a Jewish inn. When he came down for breakfast, he saw that everybody was talking in low tones. There was a very mournful atmosphere in the air. And they said that the star bike racer of Holland had died. He had an accident and he fell off a cliff or something. And everybody was in mourning. So Shom Shvadron was supposed to give a speech in the local shul then. The whole Jewish community was mourning. For a non-Jewish So, okay, you know, we're sad that a Jew dies, but here was, the point was that this, who it was, right? So he got up, and he began with the mournful tune of a Hesped. Have you ever heard the way the Yerushalmis do it? It's with a whole tune, a very mournful tune. They give Hespedim. And he said, there was a cat in the neighborhood of Shari Chesed, that was where he lived. It was able to climb trees like a lightning. Nobody could run faster than that cat. And that cat fell off a tree and died. And he, Mamish, went into a whole tearful rendition of mourning for that cat. He said, and what was this star next to that cat? That star couldn't even run half as fast as the cat. Take the greatest sports stars. You know, the people in the Olympics who can lift who knows what kind of weights. That's the greatness. It's human achievement. They can do half of what your average gorilla can do. The fastest runners. The great achievement is that they can run a third of the speed of an alley cat. That's human greatness. That's what we're talking about. The intellect simply serving the material. And look how much thought goes into preparing these events. That's intellect serving the material. Right? The greatness of human intellect is going into what? Showing that we can be half of what an alley cat can be. What's going on? Okay, we'll end here. Continue this next week. Again, I'm giving this disclaimer that this is not what Sefer HaKuzari is about. But it's chashuv to expose ourselves to these things too. There's a lot of profound discussion here. I hope we'll keep it to not more than another week or two. Afterwards, we take on the religions. That's a subject itself. Then we get to Judaism, which is our subject.